10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. You want to join the fun, give us a call, 855-839-1210. We're going to get into the current status of things in Iran.
Sterling every damn night.
Dancer makeover. Details later. Strippers on the loose. Sterling every damn night.
Florida Stories is about people so dumb you'll almost wreck your car. I'm James Parker. Florida Stories still to come on Sterling every damn night.
This is Matthias Bohm-Bell. Coming up, my Hollywood report on movies live on Sterling every damn night.
Hi, I'm retired detective Vic Ferrara, and on tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective, what does insurance fraud and a burnt vehicle up in the Bronx have to do with Fort Myers, Florida? Coming up in moments on Sterling, every damn night.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and I have a late night story for Midnight Misfits on Sterling, every damn night.
What you doing with that toddler? Details later, the people of Walmart, Sterling, every damn night.
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man, in case he comes to town.
What?
Keep a little dirt under my pillow for the dirt man, so he won't take me down to his lair deep under the mountain.
What are you talking about?
Underground.
Sydney Sweeney is the girl for me. Her jeans are really something to see. She has some trouble squeezing into them, it seems. But Sydney's the stuff of Madison Avenue's dreams.
Diverse women is what I'd rather see. Sydney's promoting white supremacy. Her ad is thinly coded Nazi agitprop. You're all rubes.
Great jeans.
She's obscene.
You're screwed in the head.
I wish you were dead.
Sydney Sweeney, she's the breast.
All right, Sterling every damn night. Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Give us a call. 855-839-1210 is the number here. So the U.S. has... I almost got gas today. That is all I care about. I don't care how many people die. All I care about is my gas tank. And I almost got gas today, and I was like, no, I'll wait until tomorrow, because I'm stupid. And then the U.S. Seized an Iranian-flagged cargo ship after blowing a hole in its engine room when it tried to break past the Navy blockade in the Strait of Hormuz. That is what President Trump revealed today. The USS Spruance, I don't know what that is, destroyer intercepted Iran's Tuska cargo ship in the Gulf of Oman, taking custody of the ship after it refused warnings to stop. Rude. Very rude. Dude, we told you to stop. Now you got a hole in you. And that's the way that goes. But according to Trump, who boasted on Truth Social, today an Iranian-flagged cargo ship named the Tuska, nearly 900 feet long and weighing almost as much as an aircraft carrier. I can't lift either one. I don't care how much they weigh. Tried to get past our naval blockade, and it did not go well for them. Right now, U.S. Marines have custody of the vessel. The Tuska is under U.S. Treasury sanctions because of their prior history of illegal activity. We have full custody of the ship, and we're seeing what's on board. I hope it's candy. I hope it's candy and Yoo-hoo. That's what I want. I don't know how much candy and Yoo-Hoo they have in Iran. Based on all the videos I've seen, it's a fairly depressing place. I think they would be a lot nicer and less terroristy if they had more Yoo-Hoo. It's just a thought. Want to throw it out there before we drop more bombs. But a CENTCOM video shared online showed the U.S. Navy ship warning those aboard the Iranian cargo ship to vacate its engine room before firing multiple blasts. By the way, I like the way, the humane way we do war now. Excuse me. Excuse me, could you get off the boat, please? We're going to blow it up. Excuse me. I don't know. It just seems to me not very warp-like. But the Marine was saying before the ship's horn blows and blasts go off, Motor Vessel Tuska. Motor Vessel Tuska. Sounds very musical. Vacate your engine room. Vacate your engine room. We are prepared to subject you to disabling fire. And then they did. I do hope they vacated their engine room. Otherwise, things get messy. It's hard to get blood out. The seizure of the Iran-flagged vessel comes as Trump is pushing to lock down a peace deal with Iran before the two-week ceasefire wraps up on Tuesday. I'm just going to toss this out there. Doesn't seem like that's going to happen. And I'm sure you're all wondering. They did not get gas today. I'm going to have to get it tomorrow. And it's going to be $1 billion a gallon. The seizure of the flag comes as that. Trump said earlier in the day, Sunday, that his special envoys, I want to be a special envoy, Steve Witkoff and Jared Kushner will head to Pakistan for the talks. The White House confirmed that Vice President Vance will lead said discussions. But a top Iranian official has said Tehran won't partake in the talks, citing concerns that U.S. demands are too tough. Aw. You know what else is tough? Bombs. Bombs are tough. I'm told I've never been bombed either. The state-run IRNA outlet said Iran stated that its absence from the second round of talks stems from what it's called Washington's excessive demands, unrealistic expectations, constant shifts in stance, repeated contradictions, and the ongoing naval blockade, which it considers a breach of the ceasefire. It's only a breach of the ceasefire if they don't cease fire. If they cease to cease fire, if they don't cease fire, then you got something there. Trump has been emphatic that Iran must abandon its nuclear program. Good. I don't want to see Israel get nuked. And that's, I think, what would happen if Iran had a nuclear bomb. But they have to turn over their enriched uranium, believed to be buried underground by bombing to the U.S. The president has also demanded that Iran agree to fully reopen the Strait of Hormuz and their first-round pick in the upcoming NFL draft. Iran has wreaked havoc upon the global economy by sporadically opening fire on vessels traversing the Strait of Hormuz, where about a fifth of the world's seaborne oil supplies flow through annually, and the attacks have caused all kinds of problems. So we thought that things were calming down. It would appear not. It would appear that we're still making things go boom. Don't have a huge problem with that. It appeared that Iran is still posturing. That's what they're going to do. And it appears that probably the single most important thing. And I'm sure many of you feel the same way, is that I'm going to have to pay more for gas tomorrow when I go get it, if I even go get it. I might wait for one of those knee-jerk changes in the stock market, something like that. I might do that. I don't know what kind of time I have. But I only really bring this up. I mean, nothing against. We ran a best of show before this one started on some of the stations. And they were talking about how great things were going. Things ain't going great. We had to blow a hole in a boat. We had to blow a hole in a boat. It was nice of us to warn them first. Counterproductive, but that's just me. And now we have the boat. We don't know what's on it yet. They haven't told us, but we have the boat. And I guess we're going to keep blowing holes in boats and asking them not to be in their engine room when we do it. And then we'll see what happens on Tuesday, I guess, is the real red letter day. The Iranians say they're not even going to show up. And they can still show up, by the way. All of the posturing they do is for their people. All of the posturing they do is for the Iranian people who don't have unlimited access to other information. So we'll see what that. We'll see what happens on Tuesday. And we'll see if this really comes down to the single most important issue. How much is Casey going to have to pay for gas? And we'll get you updated on that. 855-839-1210 is the number here. When we come back, we're always told that voting is not bad. Voting is completely under control. Nobody needs to show an ID to vote. Voting is perfectly safe and fine and great. Yes, you have to show your driver's license to rent a golf club, but voting is just free and clear. No problems at all, except when there are. And there's kind of a funny story of when there is, and we'll tell you about it when we come back. My name is Casey Bartholomew. You're listening to Sterling Every Damn Night.
It's Casey Bartholomew. He's better than Phil Donahue. And he's on Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Give us a call at 855-839-1210. We got Mateus coming up. We hope. a little bit later on to talk about movies and the box office and whatever he wants to talk about. I pressure no one when they come on the show. But right now, I wanted to share this story. You know, we're constantly told, like, I am a voter ID guy. I think you should have to show your ID to vote. I don't see why it's a problem. Honestly, truly do not see why it's a problem. You're a citizen of this country. You should be able to prove it with a card of some kind. And if you can't get one, then how do you get into the voting booth to begin with? But that's neither here nor there. We are constantly told by people who are against having to show your ID to vote that there's no reason for it. No reason at all. We shouldn't have to do any of those things. That's ridiculous. Silly person. That's what they say, and they hurt my feelings, by the way, when they do it. Well, it's not 100% now, is it? A woman in California registered her dog to vote, which is funny as hell. But she registered her dog to vote. I said three times. As a push for voter ID to stamp out voter fraud gains momentum, Laura Yorex registered her boxer Maya to vote in the during the 2020 election, she says, to reveal the vulnerabilities in the state's voter registration system, which we are constantly told do not exist, except for those times when dogs register to vote. I think everybody should register their dog to vote. I think everybody should take the time to register their dog to vote just to prove the point, which the weakness critics have long warned about, but say has largely gone unaddressed again, because we are constantly told that there are no weaknesses in the voter system. It's foolproof, except for the times when dogs register to vote. She thought it would lead to reform, but when you prove people wrong and kind of smack the government in the face, our omnipotent government doesn't like that. They don't like it, especially in a blue state where the blue leaders, the Smurfs, are always trying to tell us that there is nothing wrong with the voter registration system. It's perfectly fine. We don't need voter ID. So when you live in a blue state that is dominated by blue people, the Smurfs, and are trying to make a case for not having voter ID, you're going to get some pushback when you cause a problem. She's getting a pushback. She says it's turned into a nightmare with her now facing charges related to voter fraud. I would just go into court and I'd say, Your Honor, I can't be charged for this crime because according to the people on the other side, it doesn't happen. I couldn't possibly have simply registered my dog to vote because the people on the other side are always saying that that's not possible. But look, here we go. It's something lawmakers at both the state and federal level are working to address by requiring voter ID. And now she faces charges. In Washington, the proposed SAVE Act would force Americans to prove their citizenship in person to register and show ID even for mail-in ballots. Meanwhile, in California, which is where this happened, a Republican-backed ballot initiative aiming for 2026 would require voter ID for in-person voting and stricter verification for mail ballots. Why not? Why not? Because there's nothing wrong with the voter situation. Voter registration is perfectly foolproof, except for the times when dogs register to vote. This woman said, Yorex is her last name. She said, if somebody had looked at it, if somebody did something about it, but nobody cares, explained that she immediately contacted election officials when her pet received a mail-in ballot. She just put her paw on it. Voted for someone. The woman says she was first alarmed after six voter registration cards showed up at her home, despite only two eligible voters living there. She said, I think that's really what kind of set me off. We have two people living in this house, my husband and I. We got six cards to register to vote. I think, well, that's ridiculous. So she decided to test the system by seeing if she could register her dog to vote and be sent a ballot. And guess what happened? And the head Smurfs in charge of the blue state of California did not like being shown up. And they are not at all pleased about it. She said, if you look at the actual form that I sent in, it's literally a made up name, made up birthday, no social security number at all. And they sent the dog. They sent the dog. A voter registration card, even though no social security, made up information, all that kind of stuff. The only thing that was real on it was my address. Maya, the dog's vote by mail ballot, included the envelope addressed to her and her dog tag. So it even had the dog. All that somebody had to do was look, and it had the dog tag on it. Nope. Yorick said she immediately contacted the Registrar of Voters to report what happened, but claims no one responded. And now they got egg on their face, and they're blaming her. She said she repeatedly tried to alert officials between 2020 and 2025 in reaching out to former Huntington Beach, Huntington Beach City Attorney Michael Gates, through a friend. She explained, "I've given my picture of Maya and her ballot and given my phone number and would never hear from anybody again." They don't want the truth to come out. They don't want the reality to come out that voter fraud can easily happen. This woman registered her dog to vote. Obviously, there's a problem. Nobody wants to deal with it. And now they're trying to punish her for it. She says, "It's not something I just gave up on. I kept trying to get someone to pay attention to it. It's not like they finally discovered it. It's that I kept pushing until someone paid attention. If she just would have kept quiet, no one would have known. Maya the dog could have kept voting." She did never vote, but she could have if she wanted to. When investigators finally contacted her in August of last year, she thought action was finally being taken. She said, "I remember the first words out of my mouth when he said, 'Hi, we're looking into your dog being registered to vote.' Literally, the first word out of my mouth was, 'Thank God, finally someone's looking into this.' But that's not what happened." Prosecutors hit her with five charges, including a felony count of procuring or offering a false or forged document to be filed. She didn't. There's no social security, no information on it. It was just the dog's name. Two felony counts of casting a ballot when not entitled to vote, and a felony count of registering a non-existent person to vote. But I thought that wasn't possible. And look, the dog's registered. On April 10th, four of the felony charges were dismissed, while the remaining count of registering a non-existent person was reduced to a misdemeanor. What this is, because the Save Act's in the news right now, this is them wanting her to go away. This is them wanting her to not say any more things to anybody else because she registered her dog to vote and it wasn't even hard. It took zero effort. And as we are told, again, this took place in California, which is a highly blue state. It is run by Smurfs. And they all wanted us to know that we don't need voter ID. It is virtually impossible to break this system, to crack this code. And this woman registers her dog. Her sentencing is scheduled for October. Just before the election. The case now sits in the center of a broader political battle over election security. This woman, again, was able to register her dog to vote in a state where we are constantly told, in California, where these people live, all the blue states, we are constantly told there is no need for voter ID. There is no need to prove you are who you say you are. And then a woman registers her dog. And it's a misdemeanor, so she's probably going to get some kind of fine. Everybody should register their dog to vote. And if you get away with it, that'll just prove the point. I love what this woman did. And it proves that we are being lied to on a regular basis by everybody who tells us that you don't need voter ID. All right, Mateus is coming up next. 855-839-1210 is our number here. My name is Casey Bartholomew, and you are listening to Sterling Every Damn Night. Sterling Every Damn Night, Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Give us a call, 855-839-1210. It is time for one of my favorite segments when I fill in for Walter. Mateus, our man in Hollywood, is on with us. How you doing, Mateus?
How are you, Casey? I'm doing pretty great. And I'm fascinated to learn earlier in this broadcast that you are unable to lift aircraft carriers and battleships.
Not in battle. Just standing there, I can.
I see. Now, I think when we were kids, we all played the game Battles. You know, you sank my battleship. And, you know, it was just a matter of putting a pin into another slot or something.
Yes.
So, those are the only battleships and and you know.
Well, I'm quite an imposing physical specimen.
Oh well, possibly you can. Maybe
sure.
I couldn't even raise a dinghy. Anyway. This is a no pressure show. You said
yes.
That, so I guess
it's no pressure show.
That's great. Well, I'm glad to hear that. Well, let me tell you, there's not been a lot more pressure at the box office this week. The Super Mario Galaxy movie now on its, I don't know what weekend now, $355 million, and it made a good chunk of that in its first 3 days. I mean, it made its cost in the first night, which $110 million to make that thing. Project Hail Mary, that's the... that's right. It is pretty good.
Yeah.
The Project Hail Mary, which of course is Ryan Gosling's adventure in space with a pet rock, that's coming in second still at $285 million. And Lee Cronin's The Mummy, which I did not see, $14 million. Not doing that well, but I'm not going to talk about
good.
Those movies.
I heard it wasn't very good. I wish they would. They need to let The Mummy die. Literally,
yeah.
Because they keep bringing the money back. The Brendan Fraser first one was good, and everything since has been crap, you know? So,
And you know, going way back, it's hard to improve on Boris Karloff. So,
that kind of goes without saying. The originals are untouchable, yeah. Well, what movie, you said you didn't want to talk about those movies. What movies do you want to talk about?
Well, you know, there is a movie that is not the kind of movie I ever normally like. Actually, that's the name of the movie. It's called Normal. It's from Magnolia Pictures. And this is the latest Bob Odenkirk movie. Okay, so this is an action movie with perhaps, Casey, the highest body count this year. And the bodies are piling up. The cars are rolling over.
Is it a
it's
comedy?
It's just nuts.
Aren't they comedies?
Well,
or action comedies?
Yes. Yeah. Well, you know, it definitely is a comedy, and I'll get to that in just a moment. But you know, normally I hate this. You know, the arterial spray is everywhere. There's blood trauma. Cars are landing on people's heads and knocking them out. I mean, normally this would make me just run to the head and puke. But no. Instead, I was drawn in. I know it's hard to say this. I was drawn in because the writing was really good. And it was very funny. And the
that's what people go to. They go to those for the writing, for the witty repartee.
Well, you know, if you can make it funny and clever, you've got me because I like clever. And anyway, so here is this. You know, Fargo. There's a classic. The Coen Brothers' Fargo. That's a bloody movie, but it had that little strange edge. And this is what you're looking at.
Yeah, no, that's good. So are you comparing this to Fargo?
I am comparing this to Fargo. So let me just tell you briefly. So Odenkirk stars as Ulysses Richardson, who's a temporary sheriff with a troubled past. He's been assigned to the small town of Normal in Minnesota. The sheriff there was recently found dead, and Ulysses starts to be curious about how that happened. And he's assisted by his eager but dim-witted deputy, or as I like to think of him, Deputy Mike, played by Billy McClellan, who was in the other N movie that starred Odenkirk, which is... not Normal, but the name went just right out of my brain.
I know what you're talking about.
He made two in a row, and it's Nobody. Nobody. That was
Nobody.
The first one, and there was Nobody, too. So anyway, Billy McClellan was in that, too, and he's got this leather jacket. He's the deputy that always squeaks whenever he moves. You know, that sort of creaky kind of sound leather can make.
Yeah.
And so every it's a running gag through the whole movie. This guy is just slightly moving and he creaks. It's hilarious. It's actually quite funny.
Oh, see,
and there's several running gags throughout the movie. And they finally, this thing comes to a head when a botched bank robbery reveals the entire town, this little sleepy town, is on a big secret that they've tried to protect in the bank's vault. As a result, the whole town is now against the temporary sheriff, who knows all, and the bodies really start piling up. Now, there's a fun performance, literally, really a fun performance from Henry Winkler, the Fonz, as the town's mayor. And so he elevated it, probably had one day's work, but he made it great. And there's a young gal named Jess McCloud, who is rather attractive. And she plays the former killed Mayor, Missy killed? Did he die mysteriously? Former mayor's estranged daughter. So make no mistake about it. Normal is very violent, but it's a tongue-in-cheek bloodbath in the footsteps of Fargo. And I'm surprised to tell you, Casey, I loved it.
Well, no, that's good.
There
that's
you go.
Good. I like that. Proves you're not a prude. No, not at all. I got to ask you, because it's coming out next week, I think, the Michael Jackson movie. Are you hearing it? Because I've been trying to find out anything about it. I'm not a huge fan. I just want to know. I can't find anything about it. That's sort of not good.
It's only because they haven't shown it to the press yet. That will occur tomorrow night, and I will be there, and I can better answer that question. Should you be sitting in this chair a week from tonight?
I don't know. I usually find out like a day or two before. There have been times when I found out on the day. So it's not unusual. So I come in and help out because I'm a nice guy. Thank you very much. I'm glad you noticed. That's coming out next week. I've heard it's supposed to go. They're expecting it to go gangbusters at the box office. So I hope it's somewhat good. Like I probably will not see it. I might wait until it's like on streaming or something like that, but I wasn't a huge fan. I believe all the allegations. Let's put it that way. I've been curious to see if they do well with it. I don't know. But they're expecting to the dollar money.
Well, it's supposed to be big because they're screening this for me tomorrow at the local IMAX theater. So it's even an IMAX movie. So not only will it be Michael Jackson, it'll be him. IMAX Michael Jackson, so it should be bigger than life
tall.
In every sense. That's right, which is what he was never in life.
Exactly. And three stories of Michael Jackson doing God knows what right in front of you. That'll be all kinds of fun.
Oh, my goodness.
so we'll be mind reels. I'm saying it, but everybody's thinking it. You know, how much are they going to cover that? That's what everybody wants to see. All right, Mateus, we got to step aside because I take a quick break here, but thanks for taking the time. Always great talking to you.
You bet.
All right, Mateus, our man in Hollywood, with all of the latest with the box office. I'm going to have to check out that movie Normal. I'm actually going to have to check that out and see that, because I actually like those kinds of movies because I'm a sick, disgusting human being when the microphone is not on. So that's just what we'll do. All right. We still got a bunch of stuff coming up. We got some questionable literature, erotic literature coming up, and we'll get some more things. Give us a call at 855-839-1210. My name is Casey Bartholomew, and you are listening to Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Al and Dawn.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon. Let me tell you a late night story for Midnight Misfits. Here's an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime. Natalie mimicked my earlier theatrics and flopped onto the bench with a huff. She reached behind the stand for her folder of music and, after closing my book and sliding it out of the way, spread it out in front of her. I took her previous position on the armchair and leaned against the plush cushions. It had been several weeks since I'd heard her perform, and the opportunity was worth the mortifying display of my own lack of talent. She started at the very beginning, her forehead creasing as she concentrated. I'd heard the first movement a few times before, so it sounded familiar to my ears. The introduction went well enough, but at the first, more complicated passage, she fumbled a few notes and let out a loud groan. Her lips pressed into a straight line, and she went back a couple of measures to try again. The second attempt ended the same way, and her hands dropped away from the keyboard. "I think you were right after all," she said, averting her gaze. "We should have given ourselves another week." "Maybe try the second movement," I suggested. She shook her head. "I'm sure it'll be just as awful." "Wait a minute. I did my best imitation of the same stern glare she'd given me when I'd wanted to quit. You're not getting off so easy. Come on, you have to play something. A mischievous glimmer sparked in her eyes. Do I? I inched closer to the edge of the chair and braced my hands on my knees as if to stand. Careful, or I'm going to come over there and subject you to the same cruelty you inflicted on me. One eyebrow flicked upward, yet I saw a hint of a smile. Challenge accepted. In a flash, I was behind the bench, hovering above her as she remained seated. Hey, she squealed, giggling as I seized her forearm. This is not how this is supposed to work. Too bad. I gave her a gentle squeeze before repeating the motions on her other side. Should have given that some more thought, too, before you all but chained me to the piano and demanded I perform. Unlike me, Natalie put up more of a fight when I tried to raise her arms. Her melodic laughter rang in my ears as she attempted to wriggle out of my grasp. When her efforts failed, she rotated her wrists to reverse our grip, and I almost stumbled into her as she yanked my hands toward the keys. Maybe I'll make you play your excerpt a second time before allowing you to leave, she said. I struggled to gain an advantage, yet my awkward stance made it difficult. You'll have to let me go in order to get the music out, or let me reach the piano, and then I could make my escape. Damn it, she muttered, though she didn't release me. You might as well surrender now. I bent down to whisper in her ear. Just give in and play for me. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and you're listening to an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime, which is available at Amazon. If you'd like to hear some uncensored excerpts about what could be happening on that piano bench, go to patreon.com/Thea Landon. And don't forget, you can always send me your thoughts at smuttythea@gmail.com. Now, let's see what happens next. Instead of striking the keys, she leaned back into me and hugged her arms to her chest. Except my hands were still entwined with hers, resulting in a clumsy embrace with my arms draped around her shoulders. I fought to ignore the warmth radiating from her body as she reclined against me, yet I couldn't move. Natalie didn't pull away either. 100 conflicting thoughts flashed through my mind, but I was frozen in place, unsure of what to do or say. Before I could figure out an appropriate response, she rested her cheek along the inside of my elbow and exhaled a sweet, contented sigh. What is happening? My brain's attempts to sort through the current situation were drowned out by my heart threatening to explode out of my chest. For months, I'd been dreaming of what it would be like to touch her, to hold her, and in the moment, I was afraid to move and to disrupt this wonderful version of reality. As much as I would have liked to, though, we couldn't stay like this forever. But what did she want from me next? I swallowed and tried to breathe evenly in an effort to calm my racing pulse. It didn't work. Without releasing her, I stepped to the side, leaving one arm circled around her waist as I sat next to her on the bench. Wide brown eyes gazed at me, captivating me with their dazzling sparkle. I stared back at her in disbelief that she was looking at me in such a way. Hints of pink appeared on her cheeks as she bit her lower lip, yet she didn't draw back. In fact, was she leaning closer? My breath hitched in my throat, and I tilted my head toward hers. When I closed my eyes, her mouth pressed against mine, and the sensation of her soft kiss erased all of my prior fantasies. The world around us vanished as I focused on memorizing how amazing she felt. Her lips parted, tentatively at first, and I welcomed the intoxicating taste of her tongue. She probed into the depths of my mouth, and I countered every frisky swirl of her tongue with one of my own. We breathed in time with each other as we engaged in our explorations. My grip on her waist tightened, and she laid one hand on my chest, above my thudding heart. Our movements grew more frenzied, the electric energy behind the kiss intensifying. I threaded my fingers through her glossy hair to hold her close, needing to experience more of her. Oh, I think I need to stop here for tonight, but you know you can always have more. That was an excerpt from my book, Sonata for Springtime, which is available at Amazon.
10 years of OK Radio, repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions, courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Casey Bartholomew's sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night.
It's Sterling every damn night. He's on every damn night.
He takes to the air without a care and does his nightly shows. And the Midnight Misfits all tune in for reasons nobody knows. It's Sterling every damn night. He's on every damn night.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night. Give us a call, 855-839-1210. That's 855-839-1210. You want to join the conversation? I want to believe that this is a true thing. I want to believe that this is a reality. All cards on the table. I used to be a Ghostbuster. True story. Used to go into places after dark, go into people's homes, and we would try to find ghosts, and we never found one. And just like that, I wanted there to be ghosts, just never found one, never saw one. Wasn't trying to prove that they didn't exist. I wasn't trying to prove anything, the group. We were just trying to see if we could find anything, and we never did, at least not while I was there. And so this is along those same lines. When we talk about UFOs, although they changed the name to UAPs, I don't know why. I don't know what was wrong with the old name. Everybody still says UFOs, but maybe they did it to trip us up for paperwork purposes so they can say, no, that's with UAPs now. Whatever. That's probably the case, by the way, but whatever. But at a congressional hearing, this past week, former intelligence official Luis Elizondo testified that unidentified anomalous phenomena, UAPs, it's UFOs. That's all it is. I really do believe that, by the way. I really do believe that they've changed it so that when people say UFOs, they can say, no, it's UFOs. What are you talking about? They won't be lying, right? Now, President Trump said on Friday that very interesting documents related to UFOs will be released by the Department of Defense very, very soon. Like what? Is it going to be? Because remember, it was like, 2 years ago, they released some videos and we saw stuff and it's like, no one knows what it was, right? Could have been anything. No one knows what it was. And that's, I have a feeling that's what we're going to see again. Trump's comments come amid increased pressure from Capitol Hill to disclose files related to unidentified aerial phenomena or UAPs or UFOs, like everybody else calls them. Trump has not said that he believes the phenomena are of alien origin. Again, it's the same thing. I don't want to get my face eaten, right? I don't want everybody laying an embryo in my belly to blow out of my chest or whatever. I don't want any of those things to happen. But I would like to know if there were UFOs. Well, there are UFOs. We just don't know what they are because they won't really tell us. I would like to know if there's other life forms. I don't believe it because I've not seen any. I have interviewed multiple people about it in my radio career. And more than one of them has said, well, if you talk about, you know, they monitor our transmissions. You say things about the same things about ghosts, right? If you talk bad about ghosts, they'll come home with you. And none ever did. None ever did. Never had a ghost come home with me. Same thing. Well, the UFOs are monitoring our transmissions. So that may be. Okay. Was it Peter Aykroyd, Dan Aykroyd's brother? I think I interviewed him once. I can't remember if that was about ghosts or UFOs. Either way, it doesn't matter. But I was told not to talk too much about it or the UFO people, I don't know, aliens will hear and then they'll come get me. But I say the same things all the time and the UFO people apparently don't care enough about me to do anything about me. I also do not want to get probed. Not by them anyway. But the Pentagon did not immediately respond to a request for comment on the timeline for the release of the documents because they're probably not a timeline. Trump announced in February that he had directed Defense Secretary Pete Hegseth and other agency officials to begin reviewing government files related to alien and extraterrestrial life. The February announcement came days after former President Barack Obama's comments on a podcast that aliens were real, which he quickly had to walk back. Shortly after his appearance, Obama clarified that he meant the odds are good that there's life out there. And he hadn't actually seen evidence of alien life while in the White House. So apparently he and Michelle didn't share a room. That's what I read from that. But either way, they're pushing for this all over the place. I don't know what they're hoping to get. I don't know when they're hoping to get it by. The Pentagon said November 24, 2024, that it received hundreds of reports on UAPs, again, UFOs. I really do. You know, this sounds persnickety. Don't mean to be so technical, but I really do think they're changing UFOs to UAPs just so it'll trip something up along the line. If somebody asks a specific question and they can sort of talk around it because the words aren't right, because that's the way government works. They try not to tell you anything. But anyway, the UAPs. Following a 2024 hearing, including 21 that were worthy of further analysis due to anomalous characteristics and or behaviors. However, officials said they did not find evidence to substantiate life form from another planet in any of the reports they received. That is not a denial. That is just that in these reports, we didn't see anything. But again, remember, we're dealing with government. They have other reports. So you were asking specifically about those reports. I thought you meant in those reports. No, in those reports, we didn't see anything. In the other reports, yeah, we've seen little green men and the like. I would love to believe it. I think it would be cool. I hope they don't want to murder us all. I hope they just want to turn us into pets or something, and I'll get a nice little bed with a bowl of water in the corner somewhere. I'll be very happy. I'd make a good alien pet, I think. But I would never mess on the floor. Always use whatever human accoutrements they gave to me, either that kind of stuff. But either way, I don't right now currently believe there are UFOs. Well, I believe there's UFOs because I think there's people see things and that's a UFO. I don't currently believe there is alien life. I don't currently believe that there's anything flying around out there that's going to land on our heads. I would love for there to be. I would love for them to fly by. I want them to not be mean. We didn't do anything to them. I would like them to not do anything to us, but apparently the clock is ticking and sometime soon we're supposed to get some documents. But before everybody gets too excited, Trump is a master shift changer, like look over here. So he may have been saying that for that reason. I don't know. But before you hear, just know this is the government saying this and more than likely we're not going to hear anything. But when we come back, something we will hear about, because it could be pretty serious, is the God of Chaos asteroid. We'll tell you all about that and get your reaction. 855-839-1210 is our number here. I'm Casey Bartholomew. It's sitting in for Sterling every damn night. Never gonna lose.
Okay, what do you have when a customer shows up at the VIP Gentlemen's Club in Key West wearing a hockey mask, a pair of scissors, and an unwanted haircut? Well, you have an arrest. And the fellow arrested was a tourist from Columbia, Tennessee. And his name, Jeffrey Marshall Carroll. Do you think he goes by Jeff? Or do you think it's the full Jeffrey? Or maybe it's just free. I don't know. He's not free anymore. He's in jail. The report says that Carroll came in around 6:20 in the evening for a dance session. Yeah, we often do, don't we? Killed one of the strippers. They didn't want her services and then had a session with the eventual victim for leaving about 25 minutes later. Then Carroll showed up shirtless, gray shorts, orange hat, wearing a hockey-style mask around 10:10 at night. I hope he wasn't drinking. I hope he was drinking pretty good, because this doesn't sound like a good thing if you're sober. Anyway, in any condition. Now, police say the security footage showed Carroll grabbing the victim by her hair and pulled out a pair of scissors out of his back pocket, cutting her hair, then running out of the establishment with scissors still in hand. Drugs are bad, alcohol's bad, allegedly. And the dancer may have needed a new hairstyle. It may have needed a makeover, but Jeffrey Marshall Carroll, probably not the feller to do it. He probably could have said, I'll give you a hundy extra if you get a haircut the next time I come in. That'd be fair, right? Okay, when you go to the gentleman's club, you go to the champagne room. Don't grope the girl. Don't cut her hair. Don't give her fashion tips. Just enjoy the moment with a beautiful girl. And play like she's the battle axe you left at home. From the champagne room with no scissors needed, I'm Velo Hool, strippers on the loose, Sterling every damn night.
This is the show that's setting the trend. Across the nation, it's setting the trend. It's the bright, exciting sound of Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. I'm Casey Bartholomew. I am sitting in tonight. Give us a call. 855-839-1210 is the number here. Now, we got into UFOs a little bit. Don't know if I believe in those. Something I do believe in. Something that is in space and is happening and is coming and will be here. A rare, colossal-sized asteroid is on course to fly really uncomfortably close to Earth. And it will come closer to our planet than any other rocks of its size in human history. Closer than some satellites that are currently up in the sky. That makes you think, right? It gives you pause. We need to call Bruce Willis and the Armageddon guys. Just take a look at things. The asteroid, named Apophis, after the ancient Egyptian god of evil and destruction, is believed to span about 12,030 feet, even longer than the Eiffel Tower's whopping 1,083-foot height. They always do that, and I know big asteroids are bad, right? And I know asteroids of size are problematic for us. That's what killed the dinosaurs. Although I do have a friend who doesn't believe there were dinosaurs. They're weird. Either way, that means nothing to me when you say it's 1,230 feet high. It is taller than the Eiffel Tower. Okay, is that big? Is that bad for me? Would this is a planet killer? What is this? But they don't really get into that, but it could be bad. It has been dubbed the God of Chaos. And the asteroid is on track to pass by Earth in a once-in-a-lifetime flyby. I don't know if I should read that good or bad. Because I guess if it hits, it could be once-in-a-lifetime. It could be only in a lifetime. There could be no more lifetimes left, I guess. But it's due to fly by, lighting up the night sky, visible to the naked and clothed eye alike, on Friday the 13th in the year 2029. So in 3 years, this monstrous asteroid is supposed, they say, safely passed. That doesn't sound safe. That sounds really close. That sounds like within the margin of, you know, it could be. I mean, if it's passing in between the planet and satellites, our satellites aren't all high up in the air, you know. I mean, there's plenty of room for an asteroid to fly by. Don't get me wrong. It's not going to squeeze in. We're not going to hear it squeak or anything like that. But it's going to be really close, and I hope, you know, everybody did their math correctly and carried the one and all that kind of stuff. But either way, that's what it is. Now, asteroids of this size fly by Earth only every few thousand years on average. So it's likely that an event like this has not happened at any time in recorded history. That does not make me feel better. I'm sure that's supposed to make me feel better and get excited about the giant space rock of doom, the death rock of doom that is oozing past our planet in just 3 years. You know, when they talk about things that are way, way out there, they talk about, well, this huge asteroid is on course to smash into the Earth in the year 2175. I will be long dead. I will have been dead for a while. The people still alive will not remember me. I will not have met any of them. So that I don't care about. 3 years? That's close. That bothers me. That gives me pause, shall we say. Every so often, you know, they'll shoot, says like a satellite or something onto an asteroid, and they'll like fire jets or set off bombs, whatever they do. And they'll try to move it. And the last time they did it, it did alter the trajectory of the rock in question. I don't think this was a planet-killing rock, but I wonder if they're thinking about that. I also always tell myself, and I don't know if this is true, but I also do not know that it's not true. If we're 3 years out, and there's an asteroid that's bigger than the Eiffel Tower that could hit and kill millions of people, I don't think they would tell us that. I think they would tell, oh, it's going to fly by. You'll be able to see it if you look up. That way, if anybody sees it, they won't go, ah. They'd probably be a little more dramatic than that. But still, it's late. I'm tired. I don't think they would say, oh, in 3 years, we're all going to die because people suck and everybody would go nuts. I would go abduct Sydney Sweeney and there would probably be a line. So I probably wouldn't even get in. I wouldn't get my turn. But either way, that's the way people would be. So I don't think they would tell us that because people would start, man, what are you going to do? Put me in jail? I murdered someone. What are you going to do? And I guess so. You can go. Something along those lines. I don't think they would do it that way. They'd probably still try to uphold the laws, but I don't think they'd be too, too strict about it. Anyway, according to the agency NASA, they say, without a doubt, this is the first time it's happened when humans have had the technology to observe it. And they're going to watch it kill us all. The space agency has reassured people that there's no danger to anyone living on Earth. It's just a giant asteroid. You're going to be able to see it from space. But there's no danger. Like I said, like they would tell us. Like they would tell us the truth if the death asteroid of doom were going to slam into the planet. Because people, like, you know, there's some, if it's going to happen, and maybe it is, I do not know. If it's going to happen, somebody knows. Right. If you're I don't know if you have any contacts in NASA or the Defense Department, anything like that. If they start, you know, gathering non-perishable items in bulk, if they're driving to Sam's or Costco and buying cans and cans and cans of stuff, and if they're burying deep in their backyard one of those discarded shipping containers or a few, connecting them all together and burying them underground, I would pay attention. Absolutely pay attention because somebody knows if it's good. They're saying it's not going to, and I will take them at face value because honestly, what am I going to do if they don't? I have no survival skills. If an asteroid hits, if it doesn't kill us all right away, I'm not going to do anything. I'm not going to be able to go outside and make fire with sticks. I'm not going to be able to kill an animal and cook it in such a way that I won't die from bacteria or something like that. I have no such skills. If an asteroid hits and you need something talked about on the radio, I'm your guy. But I'm willing to bet that's not going to be a terribly marketable skill when the aliens fly, when the death asteroid hits. My wife is a speech pathologist. Again, I have a feeling that people aren't going to care about stuttering if an asteroid hits and we're all going to die. Just not going to survive very long after it happens. Not saying it's going to. But I'm not saying it's not going to either. And I am saying, absolutely, positively, 1,000,000,000%, if it were going to happen, they damn sure would not tell us about it. So you just got to pay close attention, you know, watch what other people are doing. All right. When we come back, we're going to talk about how schools are teaching kids how to protest. I'm Casey Bartholomew, and I'm sitting in on Sterling every damn night.
It's Casey Bartholomew. He's solving a problem for you. Cause Sterling doesn't actually want to work every damn night.
Sterling every damn night, Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Thanks for tuning in. Give us a call at 855-839-1210 is the number. You know, kids are stupid. I have two of my own. When they were in school, they were stupid. They get smart. Or they start to realize that you're not an idiot. One of those two things happens. But every time there's whatever, right? There's like an ICE protest. And the idiot kids get out. We're going to protest. We're going to walk out of class. And we're going to let it change. My generation is a generation that changes everything. Blah, 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 blah. Shut up. Shut up. Sit down and get back into class. That's all you need to do, dummy. I've told that I think we talked about this on the other day. I told my son, you ever protest, you walk out of class on any stupid protest, you're losing your car, you're losing your phone. Both of those things are happening. And I will do it because I'm paying for both of them. And I don't want you not to step. I don't want you stepping out of class because some idiot friend. Now, if it's a pretty girl and you're trying to impress her. Okay, don't tell your mom. Tell me. And we'll deal with that. All right. I get that. Okay. But beyond that, if you're trying to elicit change, you're an idiot. So stop doing that. Anyway, a New Jersey middle school is teaching kids how to protest. They're teaching kids how to be stupid. They're teaching kids how to waste their time. They're teaching kids about many exercises in futility, but critics are slamming the divisive lesson as a woke waste of time. Woke or not, even if you're protesting something that's not woke, you're still wasting your time. You're absolutely positively still wasting your time. Clinton Town Middle School, located in the affluent Hunterdon County, has come under scrutiny for hosting a mock rally to teach students about civic concepts like the First Amendment. District Superintendent Melissa Stager said this at the time. Now, if they're teaching them about the First Amendment, there better be consequences when they protest. Because if not, they're doing a disservice. Also, they're wasting time. I learned all this stuff, right? I learned what the First Amendment was. I learned what protests were. When I was in school, I never had to leave my seat. And I'm not stupid. I heard that. I am not stupid. But we're teaching kids today to be stupid. So if we don't teach them that there are also consequences to their actions, you get up and walk out of class, you're going to get in trouble. You get up and walk out of class. If I'm your dad, you're going to lose every freedom you have. All the cool clothes, everything that I pay for, you're losing. And that's good. Luckily, my youngest is a boy and cool clothes are just sweatpants. All right. Taking your sweatpants away or you'll just go buy another $5 pair or whatever. That's how he dresses. That's how boys dress these days. Anyway, they're teaching them how to do this. Now, video from the gathering shows a crowd of students holding signs outside the school. Based on the footage, it's unclear what the signs read, but they've said they were rallying to protest homework, but it was a fake protest. So they're just having signs. They didn't really mean anything. Clinton principal Luke Mason, assistant principal Christine Hunty and social studies teacher Jennifer Taylor looked on as the kids rallied. It's the same as another rally. They had no passion for it because it wasn't real. And none of these kids ever know what they're protesting about. Students were pretending to protest homework, they said, describing the lesson as non-political and age appropriate. But education experts were not on board with Stager, the superintendent's reasoning. One Ryan Staley, the research director at grassroots organization Defending Education, said it's incredibly frustrating and appalling that school staff and teachers are misusing valuable class time to teach kids to protest while roughly 70% of students across the country cannot read at proficient levels. So I guess that's a little bit of the solace, right? If they want to go protest, they're not going to be able to read how to anyway, right? Because kids are stupid these days. And the reason kids are stupid is because schools are stupid, parents are stupid, everybody's stupid. And we're not doing a good job with our kids. And now we're actually teaching them how to protest stupid things. I'm honestly surprised. I got to wrap this up pretty quick here, but I'm honestly surprised that the school is teaching them how to protest, because one of the byproducts of protesting, of walking out of class, is if you're not in class at a certain period of time during the day or for a certain period of time, the school loses the money that they would get for you being there. So you're running a risk there. Probably part of this lesson probably said, yeah, get out of protest, and if you feel passionate about something, you go ahead and do it. Just do it after fourth period. And I don't know what the numbers are, but after fourth period, that's probably when the school gets their money, and then the teachers can go in the teacher's lounge and compare notes about the students that they're having inappropriate relationships with. But either way, teaching kids how to go out and protest is a complete and utter waste of time. You should be teaching kids that if you go out and protest during school, you're going to get into trouble. You're going to be punished. Like I said, if I'm your dad, you're going to lose every good thing in your life that you have, because I'm not going to tolerate that nonsense while you're supposed to be in school. But in New Jersey, they're doing it. All right, we've got lots more coming up, so keep it right here. Casey Bartholomew sitting in on Sterling every damn night.
Detective Vicky Ferrari.
On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective. It was late in my NYPD auto crime career, and my partner and I were driving around the Wakefield section of the Bronx one afternoon, and I saw this Toyota Corolla with Florida plates parked in a wooded area. So we got out of the car, ran the plate, didn't come back stolen, and walked over to it, and I opened the door, and it was all smoke damage inside. So it was apparent that someone tried to set the car on fire. So since no one had reported it stolen yet, what I did was I had it towed to our office. And the reason I did that was I didn't want to send it to the pound. I took photos of it, got a printout that the vehicle wasn't stolen, and I waited. Well, about 3 weeks later, someone walks into the Fort Myers Police Department and reports the car stolen and said that they had it the night before. Well, this is impossible since I had the car burnt up in the Bronx many weeks earlier. So now I've got a problem. I've got this car charred up in the Bronx, but this woman committed the crime of reporting a false police report and filing a false insurance claim down in Florida. So what was I going to do? I called up Fort Myers Police Department. I explained to them what I had, and the detective was absolutely no help. Yeah, insurance fraud sounds like a lot of work. I don't know. Nah, you know what? We're not interested. I says, well, is there anybody down there that can help me with this? So he wound up giving me a phone number for a Florida Department of Insurance Fraud. So I call them up and I get this guy on the phone, and he's originally from the Bronx. We hit it off immediately. He says, this is a slam dunk case. And what wound up happening was I sent him all my paperwork, and he was actually able to arrest the woman down in South Florida for filing a false police report and an insurance fraud. So I used to keep in touch with the guy and call him back and forth. And, you know, he said, listen, if you ever move down to Florida and you need a job, give me a holler. Maybe I can get you in here. I said, that's great. So a year or two later, I moved down to Florida. I call him up. I keep in touch with the guy. But then I realized that's not really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So one day I got bored about a year or so ago, and I says, I wonder whatever happened to that guy. And I Googled his name. Well, unfortunately, this detective that I had worked with had gotten involved with, let's just say, falsifying information on numerous cases where he wound up getting arrested for perjury and supplying false information for criminal cases. He didn't go to jail, but he wound up getting himself put on probation and lost his job. So it's unfortunate, but sometimes cops will take things too far to get a conviction. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction. It's available on Amazon.
Stalling every night. Smutty books, lusty books, get cozy with the Outlander. A falsome wonder, falsome wonder. Study books, rusty books, get cozy with the Landon.
I'm smutty book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Hunting Astrid. With one last gulp, Tabitha finished off her drink. Want to head downstairs and dance? For anyone else, the answer would be no. But since you're asking, I'll make an exception. Astrid took several more sips from her glass and set the remains on a nearby table. I'm warning you, I'm a terrible dancer. She grinned. Everybody says that. I've never heard someone claim to be a good dancer. Despite her insecurities, she laughed. Convince me there's so many people down there, no one will be paying attention to me. Tabitha snaked an arm around her waist, letting her hand linger on her hip. Remember, I only care about us tonight, she said. Come on, let's go. With one hand on the small of her back, she guided Astrid to a wide set of steps leading to the lower level. They inched into the mass of people, staking their claim on a tiny, unoccupied spot on the glowing floor. Music resonated throughout Astrid's entire body, the insistent bass vibrating underneath her feet. The frenzied atmosphere threatened to overwhelm her senses, but she remained focused on one person. Tabitha raised her arms and moved in time with the beat, hips swaying from side to side. Astrid did her best to forget the other people around her and match the fluid motions. Someone to her left bumped into her, throwing her off balance, while a second person tried to push between them as they shoved their way through the crowd. Whoops, Tabitha called out. She grabbed Astrid's wrist and pulled her closer, their bodies colliding. Let's not get separated. She took her other hand and squeezed, not yielding in her grasp. Her wordless smile persuaded Astrid to join in as she began dancing again. The surrounding chaos kept them pressed close together, and fire unfurled over Astrid's skin. Every touch erased her inhibitions. Every point of contact left her wanting more. See, you've got nothing to worry about. Tabitha spun her around, resting their interlocked fingers at her waist. She held her tight as they moved in unison, heat looming between them. And you feel amazing, she whispered near her ear. Astrid closed her eyes. The other woman's breath tickled her neck as her chest flattened against her back. Through the flimsy fabric of her dress, Tabitha's hands left a searing imprint, and she imagined them roaming all over her. She exaggerated the next swivel of her hips, pushing backward, and was rewarded with a throaty chuckle and a strengthened embrace. The music slowed. Several people in the crowd groaned, and some left the area, leaving mostly couples behind. Astrid slowly turned around. Tabitha's grasp on her waist remained firm. She tilted her head down, her black hair cascading forward as she resumed her movements. Her dancing had calmed to match the new tempo, yet remained as sensual and enticing as before. Astrid ran her hands up her shoulders, lacing her fingers behind her back. The velvety skin bare to her touch, exposed by the revealing tank top, made her shiver. Tabitha's fluid motions never ceased, her relentless grip encouraging her to synchronize the rhythms. Everything around her blurred into a surreal haze as Tabitha reached up to brush her hair away from her face. A feathery touch of her fingertips on her cheek sent another wave of excitement rippling throughout her. She knew what was coming, and inhaled slowly in a futile effort to dampen the thudding of her heartbeat in her chest. Their lips met in a gentle kiss. She savored the softness of Tabitha's mouth, tasting hints of the fruity drinks they'd consumed earlier in the evening. long fingers tangled in the ends of her hair, holding her in place, while their tongues engaged in playful exploration. Somewhere deep in the recesses of Astrid's mind, she couldn't believe she was standing in the middle of a busy nightclub, kissing a woman she barely knew. But her desire won out over rational thought. She needed this. All too soon, the song ended, replaced by another fast-paced electronic beat. Tabitha broke the kiss, but leaned her forehead against Astrid's. "We could keep dancing, grab another drink, or get out of here," she said. "What do you say?" At that moment, Astrid would have accepted an invitation to follow her anywhere in the galaxy, but a new idea popped into her head. "I know a place we can go," she said, nodding toward the steps. "I think I should stop there for tonight, but you know you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Hunting Astrid, which is available at Amazon for Kindle Unlimited. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Years of OK Radio repulsive to the talk radio community. Billie Eilish fashions courtesy of Idaho. Tonight, lesbians, strippers, and other ratings grabbers. I'm your announcer, James Copeland.
Casey Bartholomew sitting in tonight on Sterling Every Damn Night. Coming up, we're going to talk about a harsh rule that some restaurants are starting to impose.
Sterling Every Damn Night.
Sterling Every Damn Night. Casey Bartholomew sitting in this evening. Give me a call at 855-839-1210. Wanted to share this with you. I have kind of mixed feelings about it. Because on the one hand, it's about what restaurants are doing with regard to cell phones. On the one hand, I absolutely hate it when I walk into a restaurant and my wife, my kids, and I will be like, hey, yeah, there's four of us. And they'll walk us to our table and we snake in and among the tables to get to where we're sitting. And all I see are families sitting there not talking to each other, looking down at their phones and just having no socialization whatsoever. That bugs the hell out of me. And diners at a growing number of restaurants and bars are being asked to stash away their cell phones, even in some cases lock them up as part of a push for more memorable nights out. And I get that we are doing too much with cell phones. I get it. But what business is it of theirs? If I go into the restaurant and I don't want to talk to my family, now I don't like that. I talk to my family. They don't always want to talk to me, but I talk to my family. When my kids were younger, there was no cell phone at the table. That was the rule. We talked. You could bring something else. If you wanted to read a book, you could do that if you didn't want to talk to us. If you wanted to color when they were really young or bring actual physical toys that you could play with. And sometimes I would play with you. But because my son had Ninja Turtles and I liked those. Either way, if you want to do something like that, you could. But when it came to cell phone, there was no cell phone. But that's me. I'm the parent. I'll make that decision. Why does a restaurant get to tell me to put my cell phone away? Why do they get to tell me to that I can't look at a cell phone because what, am I supposed to enjoy the atmosphere? I've been to all the restaurants. I've never been to a restaurant ever in the history of my life where I looked around and went, oh, wow. I just have to take this all in. I've never been to such an Olive Garden, but they're all the same. Okay, that's the way it is. Now, the trend appears to be gaining traction across the U.S. with more spots experimenting, they say, with restrictions, incentives, or even locked pouches. You know what I do, honestly? And again, I think you should put your phone away, but that's up to you. The restaurant doesn't get to decide if I talk to you people. I mean, my family. I'll make that decision. But what I would do, if I knew they had that kind of policy, I'd go in. I would order all of the food. I would order, just give me one of everything. And then once the order was in and I knew we were waiting, I'd pull my cell phone out and I would start tapping away or doing whatever I want. And if they came over and told me to put it away, I'd say, no, I'm over 18. I'm using my cell phone. And then I would push them to try to kick me out because I ain't paying them for the food. If they're going to sit me down there and tell me how to put my cell phone away, I mean, I'm not paying for the food. The only caveat I will give to that is if somebody is talking loudly on their phone and annoying me, because I hate that, because you know people talk on their cell phones. They're trying to impress you. So they talk really loud and, we're here. No, just coming. For now, we're good. If they're sitting right there, I hate that. So I'd like that person to shut up. But if you're just on your phone clicking away, your life, man. Do with it what you want to. Charlotte Cocktail Bar. It's in Charlotte. Charlotte Cocktail Bar. Antagonist places guests' phones in locked pouches for about 2 hours, while Delilah, an upscale supper club with locations across the country, has a no phones, no posting policy. Why can't I post? Why can't I have my phone and why can't I post? I mean, if you're dealing with some jackass influencer, I get it. If you get on some idiot who's just trying to pose with their food and, hey, fam, talk to all their people, I get it. Shut up. But if you're just sitting there posting and not bothering anybody else, I don't see what the issue is. Even Chick-fil-A has tested the tactic with a Maryland location offering free ice cream to families who keep their phones off the table. Who eats in a Chick-fil-A? Did somebody actually go into a Chick-fil-A? I've never eaten in a Chick-fil-A. Never actually sat down in a Chick-fil-A and eaten. I've gone to the like playroom with my kid and stuff, but I've never actually sat there with the family. I'm sure people do. I'm just saying, it's weird to me. The trend is especially common at high-end curated spots like, you know, Chick-fil-A. Like listening bars. What's a listening bar? What is that? Is it where you go in there to listen? Well, doesn't somebody at some point have to talk? You can't always listen. You got to talk. Supper clubs, cocktail lounges, and restaurants that are offering tasting menus. This is going to Ben Tannenbaum. This is New York based vice president of partnerships at nightlife company Line Leap. Sounds riveting. Also, I really want to go to a listening bar. I don't drink, but any bar I've been to, the people who are there, they were trying to get drunk. They're trying to have a good time and get drunk. They weren't trying to listen. So I don't even know what a listening bar is. According to one guy, he says the guy from Line Leap, the driver isn't really an anti-phone sentiment. It's that guests are going out less often than they used to and spending more per visit when they do so. So operators are trying to make sure the visit delivers. They're there. If they're talking, if they're playing on their cell phone, they're perfectly happy. If they're paying for the food that you're shoving down their throat, they're perfectly happy. Don't worry about it. Just make sure the food is there and hot. Make sure the drinks are filled. You'll be fine. What it is these people, these especially high-end places, they're like, oh, I'm designing the experience. I'm designing the experience of this bar. This restaurant is an experience. I put a lot of money into, oh, look at the decor. Look at this. I don't want to look at anything. Maybe I'm not a high-class eater. You know, like Ruth's Chris. I'll do that. But maybe I'm not like a high-class eater. As long as you bring me the food I ordered and it's hot and it's edible, I'm good. We're all good. You don't need to take my cell phone away. And by the way, there is never a scenario that I will take my cell phone and put it in a locked bag where I don't have access to it. I have elderly parents. I've got kids. If someone needs to get a hold of me, I will be reachable, and I'm not going to be non-reachable because, oh, look, we put so much thought into the cutlery you'll use to cut your steak in there and the setting and the napkins and all that. I don't care. I'm just trying to eat the food. But that's the movement that's going on. And again, part of me sees it, but only from a parenting standpoint, right? Talk to your kids. But if I'm going out and I want to tap on my cell phone and I'm going to pay your exorbitant bill for that, then just shut up and bring me my food. That's all I care about. I know everybody said, no, I want to sit there and I talk. Most of us have nothing to say. Trust me. I have gone on dates. I've gone places and I've talked to people. And it's like, Okay, well, thank God the food's here, because now I don't have to talk to you anymore. Just let people look at their phones if they want to. They pay a lot of money for it. All right, 855-839-1210 is the number here. That's 855-839-1210. Coming up, another aspect of dining out that is, for the last several years, has been causing a problem for people. And we'll talk to you about that and get your reaction. That's coming up in just a couple minutes. My name is Casey Bartholomew, sitting in this evening on Sterling Every Damn Night.
The people of Walmart.
Kind of a one-woman crime spree. She's a little sassy. Nomi Guzman. She was released her own recognizance while facing felony charges. Yeah, for like stabbing her dad and then running to a church and locking herself in. Well, she decided to go to Walmart because she was let out of jail free. They gave her a get out of jail free card. And Nomi continued her wacky ways. So she promptly stole a knife and then cut a little baby in the face. So the police officers in Omaha, Nebraska, they leapt into action because they shot her dead. Shot her dead. Maniacs should never be let out of jail, at least with some consequences. And right now we have prosecutors. You let bad people out of jail, they're going to continue to do bad things. It's not, you cannot show them affection and expect them to behave better. They're maniacs. They're totally nuts. Here's the deal. Don't stab babies. I'm against it. Don't cut children with knives. And if you do that in the Walmart parking lot, expect to stand before the deity of your choice. You know, I'm a good Catholic, so yeah, I'm French. So I think I'm going to be seeing St. Peter at the end there, and Ms. Guzman. A lot of Latinos are Catholic, so yeah, standing in front of St. Pete, and why are you here? And she has to sort of explain to him that she wants to get in, but she got shot dead because she was stabbing a baby. Don't stab babies. If you need help, go get help. Mental health is nothing to be ashamed about. Admit you have an issue. Get over it. And, you know, Xanax, that'd probably be pretty good for a wonderful, crazed out woman like this, at least before she was shot dead. For the people of Walmart, I'm Velo Hool, Sterling, every damn night.
It's Casey Bartholomew, because Walter's forgotten who is supposed to do Sterling every damn night.
Sterling every damn night. Casey Bartholomew sitting in. Thanks for tuning in. Give us a call at 855-839-1210. I said there's something else going on in the restaurant industry that is driving people crazy. Has been for the past few years. I begrudge no one who's has a job and does it well and earns a living. I don't care what anybody does. Doesn't matter to me in the least. I pass no judgment on anybody. But the idea of waiting tables and waiting hand and foot on people has always fallen into the realm where people get angry about the idea of tipping. And it's taken yet another turn after a customer claimed they caught a Las Vegas waitress. Normally, Las Vegas waitresses are so classy. They couldn't get hired at the strip club, so they couldn't. No. But the Las Vegas waitress using a sneaky tactic to secure a higher gratuity. In a post that was shared on the interwebs, the diner alleged that the server briefly took their card and pre-selected the tip amount before handing the machine back to for payment. You know, sometimes you get those machines, and there's a bunch of issues, but you can click on the tip amount, the percentage. Part of the problem with those is that the numbers don't always gel. You know what I'm saying? They'll say, it's 20% is $5 billion, but it's really not. It's like a quarter. And you end up paying that because you clicked it and you don't look at anything. And they're being sneaky about those things. Not everywhere. But some places, and at least in this one situation in Las Vegas, the waitress tried to up their tip a little bit more. The post read, Vegas restaurant, waitress took my card, entered okay for the amount, set the tip to 22%, and handed it back to me for my PIN. He said, not a chance I'm falling for that. You know why she did it? I mean, I'm guessing it's true, because it's on the internet. and they aren't allowed to put anything on the internet that's not true. Those are the rules. I think I wrote them down somewhere. But she did it because nobody looks. Nobody checks that stuff. That's the way they were doing, playing the funky math with the tip amounts, like I just told you about. Sometimes they'll say, this was 20%, but it's not 20%. You actually got to look at it. And they give you it's not pressure. It's like they hand you the thing and you go ahead and do it. And nobody's going to sit there and go, oh, let's see. That's, you know, if you carry the tube, blah, blah, blah. You don't do that. Because if you're wrong, then you just look like a jerk. But if you look at it, this is kind of what happened. So good for this guy. The diner said they ultimately left a smaller tip. Well, yeah, that's what I generally do when someone tries to steal from me. Generally speaking, if somebody tries to steal from me and commit some kind of fraud on me, I will tip them far less than that amount. And they also raised the issue with management. They sent an email after their dining experience, arguing that no server should decide a gratuity on the behalf of the customer. I agree with that 100%. Because what waiter or waitress is going to go, ugh, really wasn't at my best tonight. So we're going to knock that down to 15%. 20 standard. Used to be 15 was standard, but then we had to start paying them more, I guess. I don't know. But 20 is standard now. And if I'm a waiter or waitress, I didn't do a great job today, so I'm only going to charge you $15 for a tip. I have a weird thing about tipping. I think it's the accurate thing. I don't think it's far-fetched at all. I agree with this guy. I'll decide the tip I'm going to give you, but you know, the idea of a tip is to make sure you do your job right. You know, to ensure proper service is what somebody once told me stood for. I don't think it's true. But it made sense to me at the time, so I'll go with it. If you're going to get whatever tip you want, no matter what quality of service you give me, you don't tip, you pick your own tip in order to ensure that you get decent service. I'm not asking for above and beyond, right? I'm not asking for backflips. I'm not one of those guys who needs the pretty waitress to sit down next to me at the table, although I like it like everybody else, and that will work on me. But take my order in a timely manner, you bring my food in a timely manner. If things are taking a little while, if you come to me and say, hey, the order's in, we're backed up in the kitchen, I just wanted you to know, but it should be out soon, I'm keeping an eye on it. I understand things happen. And then if you fill my drink, you know, regularly, and then when everything's said and done, you bring me my check so I can get the hell out of it. I don't need you to treat me like a special boy. I don't care. We're not friends. I'm not there to do anything. You give me good service. This is the sole beginning, middle, and end of our relationship. And if it goes well, I'll give you a decent tip. But this is kind of screwed up. But one of the other issues, this falls into the other issue. They're trying to nickel and dime you everywhere when it comes to going out. The most egregious one outside of forcing your own tip is when they put a special fee on there and they're kind of getting weird about whether or not they're telling you what the special fee is. It's like a fee of some kind. They don't call it a tip, but it's like something like that. And then they'll come out, well, we want to do that so we can pay our employees more. Well, pay your employees more. Raise the prices on things. I won't know. But if I see a special line in there, and then they always tell you when they put the special line in there. They always tell you, well, if you don't want to pay it, then just tell the waitress and the manager will take it off. And then you look like kind of a jerk. That never really bothers me. And if it's a small amount, but over time, it's gotten to be more. And we all know the issue with tipping is that now you have to tip everybody for everything. So if I walk up and I say, yeah, can I get a whatever, something, and you have the candy bar, movie theater, whatever the case may be, and you reach down, grab a candy bar and throw it on the counter, that is not a tip-worthy experience. That's not something you deserve extra money for. I don't know why you should have to pay extra money for reaching down and grabbing the candy bar and putting it down when I could have reached over the counter and grabbed it myself. If you made the candy bar, something along those lines, then we can talk about it. But this waiter, they eventually, the guy with the waitress in Vegas, they eventually contacted him back, and they refunded the entirety of his tip. So that waitress got no tip. Doesn't say whether or not she got fired. Should have. I don't know how hard it is to find a waitressing job in Las Vegas. It's the city peopled entirely with strippers, casino workers, and restaurant workers. I don't know how difficult it is to find one of those jobs. But regardless, if she does that kind of work while she's trying to get more money and tries to steal from the customers, she should very much be kicked out of that place. All right. Thanks, everybody, for that. My name is Casey Bartholomew.
On a star-spangled night, my love, Sterling will come on the air. You can listen to him for free as he plays his kazoo, my love. Sterling, every damn night for me.
James Parker, and this is Florida Stories. Thank you. Rabid bat clings to Florida woman's arm in Hillsborough County. The old rabid bat story. A Sun Center woman discovered a rabid bat clinging to her arm on Monday, according to health officials. The woman was helping her friend into a vehicle when something struck her arm, according to the Florida Department of Health in Hillsborough. At the time, she didn't see what it was, and she went home. So while at home, she went to the restroom and discovered that there was a small bat still clinging to her arm. How would you react? Scream, throw it across the room, maybe pet it, try and make friends? This is the quote from the Department of Health. This woman immediately squished it with a towel. Squished? Is this an official term they use, a zoological term they use in wildlife management, squished with a towel? They test the squished bat, and it turns out it does have rabies, or did. And I'm not sure what they got going on in Hillsborough County, but according to this report, they've had 7 rabid animal attacks already this year.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
Next Florida story. Elderly black woman says Fort Lauderdale, Wells Fargo refused to cash her check, and she called the cops. Let's look at the details here. 78 years old, former probation officer and assistant bank manager, happens to be black, stopped by Wells Fargo branch in Fort Lauderdale. She ended up spending 2.5 hours at the bank while employees refused to cash her check. And here's the kicker, they refused to return her driver's license as well. And apparently running her name, trying to find her ID, it must have tripped something. And obviously a false positive here because they never found anything. But here's the kicker. The check is for $140. Y'all are making all this fuss over $140? If I was the guy behind her in line, I would have just given her $140 and said, get out of here. I'm tired of you wasting everybody's time. So this is kind of a silly lawsuit, but it stinks that she was wrongfully detained and they didn't give her license. Listen, Wells Fargo. You've been signing people up for fake accounts. You've been signing them up for insurance they don't want. You've been making ghost accounts so you can get these bonuses. You've been fined $100 million there, $400 million over there, $1.5 billion over here. Don't you think you would kind of keep your nose clean after all that? Just let it slide. Are you getting a whole lot of 78-year-old people trying to rip you off with check scams for $140 a pop? I'm skeptical.
Wait. Hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer.
And finally, in today's Florida stories, we're going to end on a high note here. A mayoral candidate in Key West, during a debate, takes a call from God. This guy is what they call a perennial candidate. No one takes him serious. He runs all the time. He never wins. And Key West is kind of one of those eclectic places. It's not that big, so just a handful of weirdos can have a big sway on what's going on down there. And it seems like a pretty cool place because of that. Sloan Bashinsky is his name. During a debate for the city commission and mayoral candidates, his phone rings. He answers it and says, hello, what? God?
According to a report in the Miami Herald, Bashinsky then talked about cuts to nonprofit funding and told God he thinks city officials have lost their minds. He's been telling the local media God told him to seek office. He's an advocate for Key West homeless. Sounds like a nice guy with his heart in the right place. And sometimes in Key West, these weirdos win. They have a history of doing that.
Wait, hold my beer.
What? Hold my beer.
Hold my beer. What?
Florida Stories is produced by Spring Rock.
I'm James Parker, and this is Florida Stories.
Detective Vicky Ferrari.
On tonight's episode of Confessions of a Retired Detective. It was late in my NYPD auto crime career, and my partner and I were driving around the Wakefield section of the Bronx one afternoon, and I saw this Toyota Corolla with Florida plates parked in a wooded area. So we got out of the car, ran the plate, didn't come back stolen, and walked over to it, and I opened the door, and it was all smoke damage inside. So it was apparent that someone tried to set the car on fire. So since no one had reported it stolen yet, what I did was I had it towed to our office. And the reason I did that was I didn't want to send it to the pound. I took photos of it, got a printout that the vehicle wasn't stolen, and I waited. Well, about 3 weeks later, someone walks into the Fort Myers Police Department and reports the car stolen and said that they had it the night before. Well, this is impossible since I had the car burnt up in the Bronx many weeks earlier. So now I've got a problem. I've got this car charred up in the Bronx, but this woman committed the crime of reporting a false police report and filing a false insurance claim down in Florida. So what was I going to do? I called up Fort Myers Police Department. I explained to them what I had, and the detective was absolutely no help. Yeah, insurance fraud sounds like a lot of work. I don't know. Nah, you know what? We're not interested. I says, well, is there anybody down there that can help me with this? So he wound up giving me a phone number for a Florida Department of Insurance Fraud. So I call them up and I get this guy on the phone, and he's originally from the Bronx. We hit it off immediately. He says, this is a slam dunk case. And what wound up happening was I sent him all my paperwork, and he was actually able to arrest the woman down in South Florida for filing a false police report and an insurance fraud. So I used to keep in touch with the guy and call him back and forth. And, you know, he said, listen, if you ever move down to Florida and you need a job, give me a holler. Maybe I can get you in here. I said, that's great. So a year or two later, I moved down to Florida. I call him up. I keep in touch with the guy. But then I realized that's not really what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. So one day I got bored about a year or so ago, and I says, I wonder what ever happened to that guy. And I Googled his name. Well, unfortunately, this detective that I had worked with had gotten involved with, let's just say, falsifying information on numerous cases where he wound up getting arrested for perjury and supplying false information for criminal cases. He didn't go to jail, but he wound up getting himself put on probation and lost his job. So it's unfortunate, but sometimes cops will take things too far to get a conviction. So for more behind-the-scenes NYPD stories, be sure to check out my new book, NYPD, Presumption and Dysfunction. It's available on Amazon.
Sterling every night. Study books, lusty books. Get cozy with the Owl and Dawn.
I'm Smutty Book author Thea Landon, and here's an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen. Alizira turned toward me, placing her hands on my chest. You're not upset? No, why would I be? With one finger, I tilted her chin upward to meet my gaze, the moonlight reflected in her emerald eyes. Regardless, if this is all part of who you are, then I look forward to everything you're willing to share with me. Her eyes closed as I leaned down. I brushed my lips across hers with the faintest of touches, afraid if I pushed too far, she'd be summoned away again. No one appeared to interrupt us, and the gentle gesture paved the way for a more zealous kiss. She slid her palms over my shoulders, locking her fingers behind me, and her lips parted to welcome me inside. The sweet taste of honeyed wine on her tongue drove me wild with desire. I tightened my grasp on her waist, pressing her body to mine. As I explored her luscious mouth, I threaded my free hand through her thick curls. When I grazed the bare skin at the base of her neck, she shuddered. "Stay with me tonight," she purred against me in between kisses. "I want to be with you." My heart thudded until I thought it might explode. I couldn't believe what I'd heard. "Are you sure? We haven't known each other for very long, and I don't want you to think I..." "I know all I need to know about you, Caleb." Her fists knotted in the collar of my shirt, and her hips rolled toward me. And when I shivered in the corner of my cold, terrible cell, thoughts of you kept me warm. I imagined what it would be like to be safe in your arms, to feel your body touching mine. She traced the edge of the shirt, her fingertips leaving a blazing trail across my skin. "And I wondered if you thought the same things about me." Her words aroused all sorts of provocative memories. I did. Believe me, I did. I took her hand and kissed the top of it. I suppose it's in poor taste to refuse a queen's invitation in her own castle. Alizira tossed her head back and laughed, a wide grin spreading over her face. "Let's go inside. The view from the balcony will be even more spectacular at sunrise." A jumble of feelings, from disbelief to red-hot lust, clouded my mind as I followed her back through the doors. Inside her chambers, she used an iron rod to stoke the embers inside a fireplace. Once she had rekindled the flames, she walked the perimeter of the room, extinguishing all the lamps hanging from the walls. When the last of the light came from the dancing fire, he stood in front of it and beckoned to me. I walked slowly, taking in the sight of her exaggerated hourglass figure silhouetted against the orange blaze. Alizira reached for the bottom of my shirt and gave it a yank. Grateful the darkness camouflaged some of my nervous blushing, I pulled off the lightweight garment and let it flutter away. Before it hit the floor, she swanned back into my arms and guided me down for another kiss. The heat emanating from the hearth mingled with the fervor building between us. As her chest flattened against me, the plush fabric of her dress rubbed across my bare skin, teasing me with what lay beneath. Without relinquishing control of her lips, I skimmed my palms over the swell of her hips, drawing them up her sides and to the front of her body. Pliant flesh bulged over the top of her snug bodice, begging for attention. I cupped it through the thick velvet, and a soft moan escaped from her mouth into mine. She steered me toward the ties holding her bodice in place. I unfastened the knot, and the weight of her chest helped me loosen the laces. Dipping my hands inside the open flaps, I slid the gown off her shoulders. She pulled away to slip her arms out of the sleeves, and the dress cascaded off her body. Carefully, she stepped out of the burgundy puddle, removing her embroidered slippers as she did so. The roaring blaze in the fireplace bathed her in an ethereal glow, exposing every inch of her to me. "Oh my, I think I'd better stop here for tonight, but you can always have more." That was an excerpt from my book, Flight of the Dragon Queen, which is available at Amazon. I'm smutty book author Thea Landon for Sterling Every Damn Night.
Walter M. Sterling at Gmail. I answer every email. I've got a pretty good website. WalterSterlingShow.com, WalterSterlingShow.com. And the greatest gift that you and I can receive is a request for help.
Sterling is brought to life by these creative people. Musical director Lee Harris. Technical wizard Dave Scalish. Operations Frank Canal. Sound mixers Sean Cicero, Sean Walsh, Andrew Torres. Voice actors James Parker, James Copeland, that's me, Randy Thomas, Charlie Van Dyke, Charles Van Sant, Robert Clotworthy, Peter Thiel, Erotic Thrills Thea Landon, Class Act Jill Brook, Baked Goods Steve and Selena JB Bakery, Skullduggery Vic Ferrari, Blessings Father James Drucker, Meteorologist Dr. Dave Iser, Writer Jerry the Writer, Business Guidance Craig Kitchen, Program originated by Chris Olivero. Long-suffering executives David Yagaroff and Greg Stalker. With respect, Alex Bennett, Sally Jesse Raphael, and Gene Shepard.